You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at fearthesword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you get your podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the podcast, and you can also check us out at Fear the Sword and find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. The podcast is on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Okay, today's show is going to get into the Cavs 106-99 loss to the Philadelphia 76ers. This is a game where there was no Larry Nance, no Kevin Love, no Tristan Thompson, no John Henson, no Matthew Dellavedova, and obviously no J.R. Smith, and no Marquise Chris, who we'll talk about first here in a minute. But we're going to get into that game, a 106-99 loss. Not the worst loss of the season. I expected it to go much, much worse, actually, but the Cavs played pretty tough, and there are some actual positives to take away from that game. To start off, though, Marquise Chris was suspended for one game for his altercation with Serge Ibaka. If you watch Monday night's game or on Twitter at all, you will know that we saw Marquise Chris get into a little bit of a scrap with Serge Ibaka, who went at him pretty, pretty hard on Monday night. So basically, I think this is a fair suspension for one Marquise Chris. So Marquise Chris did throw a punch. He didn't instigate it, the violence of that, but I think a one-game suspension is fair. It left the Cavs very shorthanded, but it was not unexpected, and he'll be back Thursday when they play the Orlando Magic as part of this three-game road trip that will take them next to Orlando and then do Dallas to face Luka Doncic and the Mavericks. So Chris suspended, not a surprise, left the Cavs thin and with very little front court help really in this game, and it is what it is. Okay, so the positives from the loss, I think the big one is Colin Sexton. So Colin Sexton's on a bit of a roll right now. You can look at his assist numbers in this game, and that the fact that he had one, and I don't love that. Colin Sexton, I think if he's going to be the best version of himself, is not going to just be a guy that gets empty points or scores a bunch of points and that's it. I think for him, his best value is really going to be in being a guy that can get four, five, six assists a night, 18-ish points, and move the ball, play some decent defense and whatnot, but be kind of a guard that keeps the ball moving and picks his spots and scores. That being said, this Cavs group is not one that I think was particularly set up for him to get a lot of assists, and I think I like that he was pretty assertive. So he and Jordan Clarkson co-led the team with 20 shots each. He was much better than Jordan Clarkson, who had 5 of 20 from the field, whereas Sexton was 11 of 20. Sexton made 4 of his 7 threes. That is a shot that, again, has come so far where he's taking more threes and looks more comfortable taking them in a way we just have not seen in quite a long time. Colin Sexton being that player is a real game changer for the Cleveland Cavaliers. If he can be that kind of player, not just right now, not just the rest of the season, but into next season and build on what he's doing now, that's a really big deal. I love what we saw from him for the most part in this game. The threes, the shot making, the getting to the lane, the increased patience as well. Again, you'd like to see more assists. You'd like to see more playmaking from others. 26 points is good, but you don't want him to be empty calories. But considering no Love, no real offensive structure in a way that made a ton of sense, I think this was fine. Jetty Osman deserves some credit in this game. We'll get to some of the bad for him, because I think there were some struggle bust moments for him. But 4-9 from 3 is a pretty good night. He was taking the second most shots and the third most shots in the team, Took a lot of threes, led the team in threes, was one of two guys to get at least 8 up, had 8 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, was active, was having some really nice drives as well. He's got a really nice ability to get inside and finish. I had one on Embiid where they ran a tight little pick and roll with him and Zizic. Embiid switched from on a pretty short amount of distance, just coming from the free throw line down to Jetty. Jetty didn't rush it, didn't try to use his body. He used his arm and his little bit of quickness. Got up, ducked under, finished with the right hand. It was smooth. That's the kind of stuff you want to see from Jetty. And the overall shot making for him was not good. He's still in that bit of an offensive funk right now, but I do think that little spurt was a positive thing for one Jetty Osman. Okay, so next we're going to get into Brandon Knight. So Brandon Knight, I think, had some aimless stuff in this game. He had some stuff that I don't think really worked all that well, but there also was some stuff where I think he continues to move the ball well. He continues to at least be impactful. He at least kind of is creating action, and I think he continues to at least be somewhat positive when he's on the floor. I like what we saw from Ante Zizic overall. He was at least physical. Embiid was much better than him, but I don't think Ante was as overmatched as I thought could happen with him. I think that was at least good. That touch around the rim is good. The boards are okay. Not his best game. Not nearly as good as he was the night before, but 12-5 against Embiid for him is not nothing. The Cavs did kind of put him in a no-win situation at the end of the game when they needed a bucket with like 26 seconds left. That's really tough. I like what we saw from Nick Stauskas. Nick Stauskas is, you know, probably fighting for his NBA career, and he is going to be kind of living on the edge a little bit. But 17 minutes for him, 2 of 4 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, all 3-pointers in this game, 2 boards, 4 assists, played good defense, was fighting through screens, was sticking with his man, was being aware. You know, his shot has been wildly inconsistent since he got to the Cavaliers. He's not been someone that I think has even really been all that good since he became a Cavalier. And if you look at his numbers, they're not the best. 10 games with the Cavs coming into Tuesday night, playing 14 minutes a night, shooting 30% from the field, 35% from three, which is an okay number at 1 of 3 a game. Not doing a ton in terms of boards or assists or anything, and certainly isn't helping on the defensive end because he's not really ever going to be a good defender. But if he's moving, if he's taking threes, he's making some threes, he's doing some of the stuff you saw in this game and just really playing hard and smart basketball because he at least knows where to be and is at least trying to make the right play, that's better than some of the other options the Cavaliers have. So I think that's at least a decent thing if you're Nick Stauskas to hang your hat on and feel good about. But overall, not the worst game from the Cavs. I think the big thing, the big positive really here is that they played pretty hard. The Cavs came into this game again with missing Kevin Love, who has revitalized the whole team. No Delly, no Larry Nance Jr., no John Henson, no Tristan Thompson. J.R. Smith obviously isn't around. That's a ton of guys. No Marquese Chris, who's played minutes even if he's not good. This is a group that was starting a lineup of Nwaba, Sexton, Knight, Zizic, Osman. Channing Frye played. Dengadel made his cameo appearance. 17 minutes for Dengadel is a lot. Jordan Clarkson, Nick Stauskas was the 9 guys that played. That is not a good team. That is a pretty poor group of players, if I'm being frank. But they fought. They took a lead late in this game as well. Kind of everything you'd want to see from a group that is playing with more joy were Tristan and assistant coach Dan Garrett and other guys are screaming coming off the bench and just having fun with this group. Those are positive things that I think you should really feel good about. If you're the Cavs right now, the vibes are just a lot better around this group right now. This is a team that is just a little bit in a better headspace, it would seem, right now. And I think this game proves that. And for me, at this point in the season, that is not a bad thing. And a positive, too, is that the Cavs did lose. And losing is a good thing for this group. Losing is long-term beneficial for this Cavs group. The Cavs are in a position where losing, again, is going to help them keep that draft pick, as we outlined in yesterday's show. And you can look at on Tankathon. The odds are a bit slim right now into the top three. The Bulls are playing the Lakers as we record this. That will have some impact as well, and we'll see where the Cavs fall. But at least for another night, they're going to keep at least that game and a half lead onto the Chicago Bulls for the third worst record in the league and kind of keep that buffer so they keep better odds. They're not tanking quite as bad as the New York Knickerbockers right now, but hey, not everyone can be as good at tanking as them. No one right now currently can. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk about some of the negatives from this game. And if you're looking for another podcast, may I suggest Locked On Browns. The Cleveland Browns just traded for Odell Beckham Jr. That was the dominant Cleveland sports story on Tuesday night. I would not blame you one bit if you spent most of this game looking at tweets and trying to find articles and things to consume about the Cleveland Browns. May I suggest Jeff Lloyd and Locked On Browns? You can subscribe to that wherever you get Locked On Cavs, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen to it. It's a great listen for your car ride into work. I know myself on this Wednesday morning, it's going to be Jeff breaking down the Odell Beckham trade, and you're going to want all of that there on Locked On Browns. Again, check that out. Jeff Lloyd, a great, great podcast host. All right, be right back with more of this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. Today's episode of Locked On Cavaliers is brought to you by MyBookie. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a number 16 seed last year? Can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, and even if you don't, MyBookie is a place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, the multiple bracket guy or girl. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is that they pay off fast when you win. I'm saying 48 hours, you're getting paid. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. All right, and we are back. Okay, some of the bad things from this game, because there were some tough things for this group. Let's put it that way. The Cleveland Cavaliers did come into this game, again, looking a little fatigued, looking a little bit beat down, and I think you saw what happens overall, too, when Kevin Love is not on the floor for this group. Kevin Love is the hub of everything they do particularly well right now. He's the guy that makes their offense function. He's the guy that gives Colin Sexton structure. He's the guy that gives some of these situations more juice, because he is, Kevin Love is an all-star caliber player, has looked a lot better and initiates a lot of zippiness there. Him not playing is smart for the long term, but in the short term against a team like Philly, that is going to matter. That is going to lessen your chances of looking competent. The Cavs looked competent at least to a degree, and that it was more than I did expect them to look, at least, so that in itself isn't a bad thing. But without Kevin Love, you see what he really means to this group and the structure he provides. As a whole, this was not a good offensive game for the Cavaliers. So if you want to just look at the numbers here, if you want to just look at the raw shooting numbers, if you don't even want to take a look at the analytics, you can just look at the raw shooting numbers and you can say, hey, the Cavs, this isn't great. This isn't a good offensive game for them. For the night, they finished with under 40% shooting from the field, which is pretty bad, 39.6%, 40 of 101 attempts. Philly was much more efficient, 42 of 85. The Cavs did make more threes. They made five more threes than Philadelphia. It took 15 more as well. So that 15-point advantage on threes did help kind of keep them in the game a little bit. It kept it close late. It's a reason why it worked. Now, did they miss a bunch of threes as well? Yes. You know, Jordan Clarkson, who we'll get to, was 5 of 20 from the field, did not make a single three, and that's a big reason why. So not a good offensive game, just on terms of the, if you want to look at the basic numbers. And if you go to cleaning the glass, and you look at the analytics here, the one thing the Cavs did well on offense was their turnover percentage. So only turned the ball over in 8.1% of their possessions in this loss. That is in the, you know, the 95th percentile of all teams in games this year. That's very good. That is especially impressive considering Kevin Love is out. But then you look at the other offensive numbers. A free throw rate of 6.1. The Cavs, after really using free throws to their advantage last night, took a whopping 8 free throws in this game. The only starter to take a free throw was Ante Zizic, who took one whopping free throw. That is not going to cut it. That tells you Philly's a good defensive team. I think Philly did really stymie the Cavs for much of this game, so there's some causation there. But That free throw rate is just abominable. That is just, that is really, really bad. A sign that they were just having no success. Offensive rebounding rate, not good at all. At the 15th percentile. Effective field goal percentage of 47%. That's in the 18th percentile for the year. And then points per possession at 100 in the 17th percentile. So those are pretty meek numbers. And you look at the accuracy, you know, 14th percentile at the rim at 52.6%. Not making the mid-range shots, which they weren't taking a ton of, but didn't make a ton of them. The all three-pointers, and particularly the corner threes, where they were in the 67th percentile in terms of makes, or sorry, non-corner threes, they were 39.3% in the 67th percentile per cleaning the glass. So that at least worked. Didn't make corner threes all that well, which are supposed to be the quote-unquote easy ones at 25%. Again, none of these numbers are good. Philly's a very good defensive team, one of the better defensive teams in the league, and the Cavs had a lot of size disadvantages in this one. Not all that great. This was a really bad Jordan Clarkson game, so I will obviously point out that his offense was bad. 0 of 8 from 3 is Jordan Clarkson, peak gunner. This is what happens when some of the structure, I think, around him really gets unsettled. Jordan Clarkson, when Kevin Love is there, doesn't have to be the lead guy. He can pick a spot. He can get moves off screens. We've seen him with Matthew Dellavedova on these bench units where he's the cutter. He's the guy that is going to, they'll run this quick action where he just does a little back cut and tries to beat his guy and slash the rim. He'll come around screens. He's not being asked to dribble to create, to find his own shot and take like a one-legged fadeaway. When he's doing the stuff he did in this game, he's just a much less effective player. He's got the ability to get those shots off, but he doesn't have quite the ability to make those shots at a clip where you're comfortable taking them. Now, are you going to live with him taking some of those because, you know, your offense right now didn't have Kevin Love or didn't have Nance, didn't have Dele, didn't have the sort of structure you would sort of want it to? Yeah, and he weirdly was one of two guys with a positive plus minus in this game despite his woeful offensive performance, but that's a problem. Defensively, just, you know, and also a problem. When you look near the end of the game, there was one possession to me that really stood out. So the Cavs did a nice job, 104, of getting a stop. They didn't get the rebound. Sexton did a really nice job here trying to front Ben Simmons, who the Sixers wanted to post up on the left block. So Philly swung the ball. I don't remember who passed it, but it went to, I think, Tobias Harris in the opposite corner. Clarkson just lost his man, who was the guy in the corner. They may have been in zone at this point. I would need to go back and double check that, but just lost his responsibility, gave up an open corner three. Had that worked out for Philly, that would have been pretty devastating. They missed the shot. Would have been pretty tight, and the Cavs, who had some good defensive moments in this game, would have been left pretty high and dry had that gone in, and would have been pretty tough for them to kind of maybe throw away a chance at the game that way. And then I think we'll go to here near the end of the game. The Cavs run an ATO with 29.5 left to try and get another shot. They're down 3 at this point. And this just sort of, I think, tells you what this game sort of encompassed for them. So you have the Sixers defend all the guards in the wings. The Cavs are not able to get an entry pass, you know, out into the wings so they can, you know, get their normal sort of look and get their normal sort of setting and sort of get into things in a way that makes sense. So Ante Zizic ends up rolling. Jetty finds him. And Jetty ends up getting Zizic rolling to the rim. And it looks like, okay, he might get a rim. But Joel Embiid just blocked him cleanly. The Cavs have to foul. And basically there they throw away kind of just a pretty big chance, their last chance they're really to give. And that just tells you, like, look, this is a team without these certain guys. It's the team that doesn't have the most imaginative play calling. Stuff like that is going to happen, and then you're going to be sort of left without an ability to get a clean shot off. Their best shots late in this game were Jordan Clarkson threes. You had a Rush Jetty three. Not really as much structure at the end of the game. Execution is a really big problem for this Cavs team in general. You can go back this whole season, watch the end of quarters, watch the end of games, and you see this group really struggle a little bit with some of the stuff that they have to do at the end of games or the end of quarters when they just need to execute in the half court. Some of the stuff you saw, I think, in this game as well, and it cost them. And lastly, rebounding really crushed the Cavs in this one. While they won the turnover battle 21-7, that is very impressive, scored 21 points off Philadelphia turnovers. That's something I should have mentioned in the first half of the show. But you had a team that got out-rebounded 60-37 in this one. So Joel Embiid, 19 boards. Tobias Harris, 9. James Ennis, 7. Ben Simmons, 10. Those guys feasted on the boards. Osman had 8. You know, he did all right. 7 on the defensive end. Did push the ball a little bit. Zizic only had 5. That, you know, obviously Embiid sort of swamped him in that regard. Brandon Knight did a good job of crashing, had 5. Nwaba, who was very strong, didn't have a great game, but had 7 boards. Sexton only had 2. Just a team that overall just had no success really getting the boards. That big Philly group with Harris, Ennis, Embiid, Simmons, Redick, with Redick really being the one guy who's not gobbling up rebounds, just kind of really crushed the Cavs, dictated the pace of the game. Philly was just better down the stretch. You just saw the talent gap there when they just sort of bludgeoned the Cavs towards the end of this one. And it was just kind of a reminder that the Cavs, in all comparison, are just not quite as good as sort of the teams that they're kind of playing right now, and especially they don't have a chance without Kevin Love. You know, this game was close. The Cavs deserve a lot of credit for keeping it close. I would have really liked to have seen what they might have been able to do had Kevin Love be in this one, and they could just be a little bit more competent at the end of the game. You know, maybe it's not as close earlier. Maybe, you know, that defensive issues that Love kind of provides against this team or causes against this team kind of lead to some issues. But perhaps Kevin Love also just makes them execute better at the end of the game, and they could maybe steal one on the road. This team is playing better with him on the floor. There's no question. They play with more joy right now, and I think you see that. I'm going to share one last thing here. This is just very funny. So Jordan Clarkson, apparently, I missed this on TV, and Zach Lowe and Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com are some of the people that did tweet about this. Jordan Clarkson is at the free throw line, I think in the second half. He misses 2 foul shots, which gives every free Philly fan a frosty. They were cheering and were super pumped about it. But there was a lane violation. He gets a third chance on that free throw, and then he makes the free throw. He makes it, cracks up again. He was just laughing at this whole thing, just enjoying the moment. That's just a very peak Jordan Clarkson thing. I very much enjoy that. I enjoy Jordan Clarkson just sort of being Jordan Clarkson and just kind of doing random stuff like that sometimes. And overall, look, fun game. A loss that isn't surprising, but some negatives kind of underlying the positives. These aren't huge, huge things. And again, this was better than expected, but still some little things there you kind of want to take a look at if you're analyzing this team. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back a quick extra draft segment this week with Trevor Magnotti, just sort of on some things you should be watching this week. And then we're going to be back on Friday with him as well, breaking down some international prospects. So stay tuned for our first dose of Trevor, our draft guru, on this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. And again, go check out Locked On Browns. You're going to want to hear what Jeff has to say about Odell Beckham. And joining me for a first edition of 2 this week of Draft Breakdown is the great Trevor Magnotti. You can find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. You can find his podcast, Thick Jacked Frames, at Fear the Sword. Find that wherever you get podcasts. Trevor, how's it going?
Going good.
All right, so right now we're just going to touch on the draft. So as we're recording this, there is a very there is a tank game that wrapped up. LeBron James did the Cavs a favor in beating the Chicago Bulls. So as we record this, it is 10:22 p.m. on Tuesday, March 12th. Dallas still has to play. None of the other teams in tanking contention still are active. The Cavs have the third worst record. The Knicks have lost 7 straight. They are clearly just kind of in their own class right now. Phoenix at number 2. The Bulls at 5.5 games back of the Knicks. 1.5 games back of the Cavs. And then there's a big jump. You have Atlanta. You have Dallas 5 games back of the Hawks, and then Memphis and a whole bunch of other teams sort of clustered together until you get to like the Magic and the Lakers, with Charlotte kind of in a weird middle ground there, which seems fitting for Charlotte. Trevor, we are in a position where it seems to me that the Cavs are both playing a bit more competently, as are the Bulls, because Otto Porter sort of has helped them to some degree and they're scoring more or whatever. It seems possible that they could slip to number 4. Let's say that happens. A, do you think that's A, realistic, and 2, do you think that's like a bad, necessarily like a hugely bad thing if it does happen?
I think it's realistic. Like, there's really not that much space separating these teams, and I don't know specifically how many times the Cavs play any of these teams that are kind of in that tier. I think that it's safe to say that Atlanta's probably going to be the five. Dallas is probably going to be the six. And I think that we have our four teams that are going to be getting the top four spots. It's just kind of a matter of where those teams end up meeting up. I think that there's a potential that the Bulls could definitely catch the Cavs in the loss column with them looking the way that they have recently. But really, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that the way that the new lottery odds have kind of smoothed out, I mean, that's only a 1.5% difference in terms of chance to get the number one overall pick. It's a 4% difference in terms of chance to land in the top four. Functionally, there's really not a lot of difference. And I would argue that with what I've kind of talked about before in terms of the way that the top 10 of this draft is going to end up shaking out, I really don't think there's that much of a difference between even the doomsday scenarios of picking third, four teams jumping you, and you land the seven spot, picking fourth, four teams jump you, and you land the eighth spot. Those two picks are going to be functionally the same. Like, I don't really think that it makes that big of a difference on the bottom end, and it doesn't make that big a difference in terms of your chances of landing one of the top three picks. So I don't know, just I'm having fun. I'm enjoying the way that the Cavs are playing. I'm honestly enjoying the way that the Bulls are playing. I've caught them a couple times this week, and they look at least fun a little bit with some of their guys looking healthy. So like, I think we're getting kind of what this lottery smoothing was intended to do. We're getting these teams trying at this point in the year. They're still bad. We still know that. And it looks like there's more of the illusion of teams potentially getting rewarded for looking halfway competent in March.
I think that's right. I also think there should be some comfort in the Cavs are. It'd be very surprising if they slipped past the fourth worst record at this point. They're still very bad. They have a very hard schedule. Atlanta also has a pretty hard schedule, but
Atlanta looks way better than they do right now.
they are
Also.
like Trae Young's like good. John Collins is good. Kevin Huerter is good. Like that's like a more competent team than the Cavs, even though like Kevin Love is probably the best player in either team. That seems to me sort of like that weird middle ground. Like, are the Cavs more Hawksy in quality now that Love is back? Yes, but they also like just played a game against the. They're also playing Marquese Chriss like real NBA minutes, and I watched him the other night instead of paying attention in the huddle, like was staring at the on-court game that was going on in the queue. Like the Marquese Chriss experience is like very real, and you also have a game where Larry Nance Jr., Tristan Thompson, Love, Delly. J.R. Smith is not with the team, obviously, but like is another guy that's not playing, and John Henson all missed a game. So like, yeah, the Cavs are still not all that good. They're going to be cautious with Love as they should be. Trevor, are you when you look at this lottery? I think just one thing I think I feel that is at least possible is that there are other like this is just going to be could be kind of messy because the lottery smoothing means like teams could fall back, and yes, it's only like the top part that is actually being like drafted, and then it just kind of falls in order. But what do you just sort of make of what kind of lottery options we could get here? Like just looking at the number of teams that are sort of in that sort of middle class. Atlanta obviously in a class of its own, but then you have like Memphis and Dallas and Washington and the Pellies and everything. That group of teams, if like the chances that someone does leap up, the chances that these teams are all sort of going to factor in some way in this. I mean, does that weigh on sort of how you evaluate just what this lottery could look like?
I think it does. I think that you have to be prepared for there to be a lot more guys at the top of the draft landing in really good landing spots for them. Just because I think that you're going to run into a few of these kind of like six, seven, eight, nine spots that end up, one of those teams is probably going to jump into the top four and could end up being a really good situation for one of the top guys to end up in. Like, for example, it really would benefit RJ Barrett to land in Memphis. It really would, I think, benefit a guy like potentially like Cam Reddish to land in Charlotte. I think there are some really good potential landing spots for guys down the line. I mean, there are, to be fair, there are also, like, it also opens up the opportunity for, you know, some of the teams that are probably more, we would say, quote unquote, hopeless to kind of jumpstart their rebuild. Like, Washington could end up with Zion, and that would be huge for the direction of that team. And New Orleans, the same situation. Those are teams that we wouldn't normally expect to have a shot, realistically, even though, you know, that's happened plenty of times before. I mean, the Cavs have jumped from that spot twice to get the number one pick. So so it's not like it's completely out of the picture. But, like, I just think that it makes it way more fun. It makes the lottery night more stressful if you are one of the fans of these top three teams that feels like they should be entitled to the top three pick. But at the same time, the possibilities are just so endless, and it's going to be really fun to see kind of however this ends up shaking out, and just see what the teams at the bottom are going to do direction wise with how these lottery odds end up, because there are some teams that are definitely banking on getting Zion Williamson that are not going to be anywhere close to being able to get him or RJ Barrett. And it's going to be fascinating to see what those teams do.
So who are the teams to you when you say that, that you think are sort of banking on that? Who are the teams that stand out to you as that being like their plan?
New York.
Well, I mean, obviously New York is like the one that is, yeah, they're banking on.
Yeah, I think that's New York. I don't think that's Phoenix. I think that they're kind of where they are, and like that's the problem with Phoenix. None of this is on purpose.
Yeah, they did intentionally have their owner send a goat that pooped everywhere in their GM's office.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, none of the 16-52 record is on accident. I think the Cavs are a team where that's the goal. I think Atlanta, it's the goal a little bit. That's why I think that's part of why they have the Dallas pick, and they're hoping for kind of that second shot at kind of another home run swing. So I think that's kind of their goal, but not really. Washington, definitely, like, they really need some help. New Orleans probably has it in the back of their mind. Those are kind of the big five, I would say, would be New York, Cleveland, Atlanta, Washington, New Orleans would be the teams that I think are most invested in getting the top pick. I think that everybody would be excited for it, but those are the teams where, like, if they don't get it, it becomes like, really, they have to reconfigure what their plan is long term.
Wrap it up on this. Again, you'll hear more of Trevor on Friday. But what to you is just the one team that if they do make a jump that you'd be most fascinated by? And let's say it's like them not getting number one and making the obvious pick. What's the team if they get, you know, two, three, or four that you would just be most interested to see how they approach that pick?
I'd be fascinated by what Orlando does with one of those picks, because there is not an obvious, at least to me, there is not an obvious point guard option among the top picks.
You're the Ja Morant hater online, and I just think people should keep that in mind. I can't say I agree or disagree with you, because I just haven't evaluated him enough or thought about that enough. But that's just like the context here. That's why you're saying that.
Yeah, like I don't think there's a guy. Like, I'm really fascinated to see who they would take at number two, like, to choose between Ja Morant and RJ Barrett, or definitely if both those guys are gone and they're picking fourth. Like, they don't need forward help, they don't need big help, and like, it really is interesting to see who they would end up taking with that four spot that wouldn't either get buried behind the guys that they already have or force them to make some very interesting decisions with some of those guys, like Jonathan Isaac, like Aaron Gordon, like Evan Fournier in the long term. So I would be very fascinated to see what Orlando's path would be if they landed there. I'd also honestly really be interested to see what Atlanta's going to do with two picks. I did an exercise last night with a couple of members of Draft Twitter where we kind of did a mock draft, and I ended up with both Atlanta picks and ended up taking Jarrett Culver and Bol Bol for them with the 5th and 6th picks. And I'd be really fascinated to see if like what their plan was, if they tried to do something similar with that, with like the home run swing and then the sure guy or something similar. So like they're the other team that I think it's just going to be, if they get that second pick from Dallas, if Dallas doesn't move up, that's going to be really fun.
I'll just say this. Dallas is the team to me, and it's not just based on, it's not really about who they would pick. It's more about what that pick does for them. Obviously, you have Luka. You have this franchise player right there. They have Porzingis, and it's a big question mark of what Porzingis is going to be because of the injury history and everything like that. But like, if he's healthy, KP and Luka is like the foundation of a really, really good team. Like, that is what every team wants, is two stud young players you can build around. If they get a third guy, and like if they get number one, like Zion would be like fascinating there, obviously. But like if they, you know, if they get like three in, it's like they have to kind of pick their like the guy they think being the third kind of fit there. What do they do? How do they approach it? And what is that? How does that end up ultimately affect their season trajectory? That to me is just a very fascinating question.
I just
don't know what the right pick is there.
Yeah, I've said since the beginning of the year that, like, in terms of, like, Zion plus another star among the teams where it's plausible that they can land him, Zion and Porzingis is the most possible fun pairing that you can have. There's not a second option to me. Like, of the teams that would pick top 10, like, him and Porzingis is just such a perfect marriage of skill sets. And I think that with Luka on top of that, like, Dallas is instantly – they're the new Oklahoma City if that's what ends up happening.
Currently reading Boomtown, and I will just say, anytime I think about OKC, I just think that there is just so much to unpack in that situation. It's more complicated than that stuff can just be really, really complicated if things work out. And then you read the takes on James Harden when he got traded. It's like really fascinating to look when you think about. But that's a whole other rabbit hole, because that is the biggest rabbit hole you probably have in the NBA in the last 10 years. But you can find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. We're going to be back on Friday. We're not going to get into NCAA tournament prospect evaluation just yet. We're going to go into one of Trevor's favorite areas, international ball, and then we'll be back, you know, the following weeks you get into the tournament. You can check out a Cavs-specific draft board output for the sort as well this week. But Trevor, thanks as always for doing double duty this week.